May it please the court.
You may proceed.
An employee who drives an employer's vehicle while intoxicated is a permissive user of the vehicle under the employee's insurance policy. In this case, James Campbell had general permission to drive his employer's vehicle, but he drove it in violation of their rules while intoxicated and got into an accident with my client, Ricky Griffiths. Regardless of his rule violations, Mr. Campbell was a permissive user under the employer BNSF's insurance policy with Old Republic under the Omnibus Insuring Clause. That clause stated that anybody who is using the vehicle with the permission of BNSF isn't insured under that policy. The court concluded, the trial court concluded, that Mr. Campbell was not a permissive user, and that is what we're appealing. And in the words of the standard of review, because I know that's probably in somebody's mind, is the trial court misdeclared and misapplied the law by permitting alcohol rule violations to vitiate permissive use under an omnibus insuring clause, which is mandated by Missouri's financial responsibility law. Just as a brief background on the facts here, Mr. Campbell was a BNSF employee who traveled with a Thai gang. They'd be out of town in Springfield, Missouri, in this case, to do their job. If you had a vehicle assigned to your position, like Mr. Campbell did, then you could use it for personal purposes while you're on the road.
Now, was that a written policy, or how was that expressed?
That was, there was no rules against it, and nobody in the history of the railroad was ever disciplined for using the vehicle, company-provided vehicle, while out of town for personal purposes.
Had an employer ever, or supervisor ever told him he could do that, or?
There was some suggestion of that, but the higher-ups at BNSF, in this case, which is in the record, said that, yes, while you're on the road, you're not expected to thumb a ride, to go down and get you something to eat, or you can use it for personal purposes. There was no evidence, no finding by the trial court of any prohibited purpose other than the ultimate conclusion, which was he couldn't drive it while he was drunk. So in March of 2009, Mr. Campbell had a company vehicle. It was broken down, and he was told to go get a rental vehicle from an Enterprise Rent-A-Car. The fleet manager for BNSF told him specifically, do not get insurance coverage on this on your rental vehicle, because, you know, he just assumed, or I think there was that Old Republic's insurance policy would cover him. So he declined the rental vehicle's optional insurance coverage from Enterprise, and took off in the rental vehicle. He then drove from his home in Springfield, or in Tennessee, to Springfield, where the crew at BNSF was having a barbecue at the hotel. He got there and drank a copious amount of alcohol and was escorted to his room where he went to sleep. He then woke up a few hours later and he felt hungry, so he drove up the road, and en route he collided with my client at a high rate of speed. The accident ultimately involved about eight different vehicles, and he ended up, I believe, against the Ruby Tuesday's restaurant with the tires still spinning. The police showed up, took him to jail, and when he bonded out, BNSF fired him for violating their alcohol rules, which said don't drive our vehicles drunk, and another one that says don't be on our property while you're drunk or while under the influence of intoxicants or with any measurable amount of alcohol in your system. It was those rules that the court found removed his, the trial court found, removed Mr. Campbell's status as a permissive user of that BNSF-provided vehicle. However, it's our position that that was a misdeclaration, misapplication of the law, because more than 40 years of Missouri case law, including two cases from this court, say that those types of rules, those operational rules, such as don't drink and drive, are not use prohibitions, but are restrictions on the manner in which the vehicle is operated. Now, before, I mean, another question that is, I thought that was needs to be answered is BNSF's role in this case. This is brought pursuant to the Equitable Garnishment Statute, which says you bring it against the insurance company. But in this case, BNSF is the insurance company because of the nature of their insurance policy. They have a fronting policy, which is basically a policy with $1 million limit with $1 million deductible. So for the purposes of this case, they are the insurance company. They're not named as an employer, although we're talking about the employer's rules and things like that in order to address the question of permissive use. In fact, the respondent superior issue was addressed by Judge Whipple in a federal case long ago and found against us that he was not in the course and scope of his employment. And the reason I emphasize that is because I think the trial court confused the standards for respondent superior and permissive use under an omnibus insuring clause. permissive use is much more liberally construed, much more broadly construed than whether an employer is liable for the acts of its employees. The reason for this is because omnibus insuring clauses are mandated by Section 303.190.1, which is Missouri's financial responsibility law, that says that not only are you required to insure the owner of the vehicle for your negligent operation of the vehicle, but anybody using your vehicle with the insured's express or implied permission. And as far back as 1961, this court has held that that must be construed very liberally in order to expand the universe of people insured.
A lot of your brief, you all discuss, and opposing counsel discusses, what would be the effect of our accepting opposing counsel's argument that drunk driving is excluded, and you're saying if that were true, then if any other provision of the policy were disobeyed, like you hadn't arrested for 10 hours or you talked on a cell phone, different things, there would also be no coverage, and you would end up excluding coverage every time there was negligence.
Absolutely, Your Honor, especially in the case of a fronting policy like this one where the employer acts as the insurer. My point with that was that nobody loans a car to somebody else saying, go ahead and drive my car drunk. Nobody does that. It's not the only thing
they
said.
Or exceed the speed limit or go through a stop sign or
yes,
whatever.
Absolutely. And BNSF actually in evidence is there were rules that said don't drive negligently, be courteous, don't smoke a cigarette and drive our car. You must wear your seat belt. You must have your headlights on.
So is there anything, though, that as a matter of policy, it feels different if you're driving drunk versus doing those other things. Is there anything in the contract or in the insurance that makes it different when you're drinking, or is there some public policy reason why we might want to distinguish drinking from other kinds of operational restrictions?
Well, I think there's a very strong public policy to ensure financial compensation for the victims of drunk drivers, such as my clients in this case. I believe that Missouri's financial responsibility law mandates the same.
Talk a little more into the mic.
I'm sorry, I'm not like Mr. Bauer. I'm kind of quiet. The financial responsibility law mandates that there must be coverage, and I think in the case of drunk drivers, you can't let a company rule against drunk driving or getting in our car or being on our property whenever you've been drinking or intoxicated, or by their rules, even if you had a little bit of Listerine before you got in your car. We can't allow something like that to vitiate permissive use under an omnibus insuring clause. And in fact, there are a number of cases, two of which are from this court, the Weathers versus Royal Indemnity and Scholl versus Royal Indemnity, that talk about those types of restrictions. There's two or three court of appeals cases, Tharp versus United Fire, United Fire versus Tharp, and one that's very similar to this one as well, Allstate versus Sullivan, that says you can't let rules in a rental contract in that case against drinking and driving vitiate permissive use. It doesn't happen that way. And in fact, the Allstate case said that if we go down that path, the company will start engrafting rules into, let's say, don't drive negligently, and then the insurance company can grab onto that and say there's no coverage because you violated the rule and drove negligently. So omnibus insuring clauses are intended to expand the universe of people insured, not act as a restriction on coverage. And I believe that is the root of the court's error in applying and declaring the law in this case, because what the court did was take these company rules that Mr. Campbell admittedly violated and grafted them into the policy and made them into conditioned precedent for my client to recover for his damages. The trial court also found that a violation of those rules, in spite of what the courts of this state have said in the past, that an alcohol rule can and did violate or vitiate permissive use under an omnibus insuring clause in this case. We think the trial courts, the judgment is contrary to Missouri law, and again, the Missouri law is declared in Winterton back in 1950, says you got to construe these things broadly, Brody, Scholl, Weathers, Sullivan, and Tharp, that mandate that what you're supposed to do in the cases of where there's company rules like this one, you look at whether those rules are use prohibitions or they're operational restrictions. If you allow a operational restriction, such as you were saying, don't drive negligently, don't drive drunk, to determine what is permissive or not, you're going to allow that little operational rule to destroy the coverage that's mandated by the Missouri Financial Responsibility Law. Now, I've addressed this in my brief at length, but use versus operation is what the state of the law is in Missouri. Use of a vehicle, and that's what the statute says, use, it uses the term use, not operate. Use is the employment of the vehicle for some purpose or object. Operation is the driver's direction and control of the mechanism or purpose of propelling the vehicle. And I took that out of this court's case in Weathers. Those are direct quotes. The common theme to all the cases that have addressed this case since 1950 is that as long as the use is permissive, the owner of the vehicle, the one who made the rules about operation, will not be heard to complain about the manner in which the vehicle is operated, because to do so would allow an operational rule to destroy coverage under insurance that is mandated by Missouri law. As it applies to this case, Mr. Campbell had broad general permission to use the vehicle. He was specifically instructed not to get insurance, and he broke the rules, drove drunk, and wrecked into a whole bunch of cars. The court, in its ultimate conclusion, said that his violation of these alcohol rules made him a non-permissive user under the insurance policy. And as I've addressed already now, the case of Allstate versus Sullivan addressed a rule like this one. In that case, there was a rule in a rental contract that said you are not permitted to use, operate, or touch or anything our car if you are under the influence of intoxicants. The in violation of that, the defendant in that case got drunk and wrecked into somebody. The court found that that rule was not enough to vitiate coverage or vitiate permission under the omnibus insuring clause at issue in that case. And in fact, that rule, which says you can't use our vehicle if you're intoxicated, was much stronger than the ones that BNSF had in this case. And we believe that the trial court's judgment should be reversed and the case remanded for an entry of judgment in favor of plaintiff on the issue of permissive use. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. The trial court had jurisdiction over this case, and it did not misapply the law. The policy behind the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Law, Section 303-190, does not prohibit an entrustor of a vehicle from restricting permission. Here, there was an explicit restriction on Mr. Campbell's use of the vehicle. And actually, that restriction applied in a broad context. The fact that it ultimately impacted his use of the Silverado in March of 2009 doesn't change that fact. And that is completely consistent with the law requiring coverage under an omnibus insurance policy. In this case, there was neither express or implied permission. The trial court expressly found that Mr. Campbell had limited permission to use this vehicle and that he was not authorized to even enter the vehicle if he had alcohol on his breath. Of course, in this case, we know that Mr. Campbell was operating the vehicle over two times the legal limit, but what is important in this case is the trial court's determination that Mr. Campbell never had permission or authorization to even enter the vehicle because of the fact that he had...
Well, of course, and that's the question we're going to decide is, did he have permission or
absolutely.
Was this a matter of operation? Can you address opposing counsel's arguments that if we accepted your argument here, then the policy could prohibit driving negligently, prohibit going through stop signs, prohibit hitting another vehicle, prohibit all sorts of things, and you say that denied permission. Why is this any different than that?
Well,
our prior cases have said it's not.
Sure.
So tell me why they're wrong.
And, Your Honor, I think there are a couple of distinctions here. Number one is in the rental car cases that have been decided by this court as well as the Court of Appeals, what the courts have repeatedly said is that in those situations, the rental car company effectively tenders to the lessee complete and unfettered dominion over the car during the term of the lease. That is not what we have here. In a situation where the employer places express restrictions, and in this case, Mr. Campbell, in fact, was a supervisor responsible for educating his own employees on those restrictions.
So what if the policy said you can't drive the car if you haven't had 8 hours sleep or if you've been on the road for 10 hours? Those are express restrictions. Did they deny permissive use also and there'd be no coverage?
No, and I think, Your Honor, where the trial court expressly says this, and I think hopefully answers your question, is when it said, quote, "The court rejects the suggestion by Campbell and Griffiths that the prohibition against using a vehicle at all after consuming alcohol is similar to the prohibition regarding a seatbelt or speeding." Here, Campbell did not qualify as an insured, i.e., a permissive user at the time
of
the accident.
But that begs the question, why are they different? I know you said that and you say that. Tell me why in the policy they're different.
Well, I think they're different for two reasons. Number one is there was a very express restriction, and that Mr. Campbell said he did not have authority to even enter the vehicle if he had alcohol in his breath. And secondly, the public policy in Missouri against drunk driving is the equivalent to the public policy behind the motor vehicle financial responsibility law.
But opposing counsel says there's also a and certainly, I mean, intuitively it feels different, but there's nothing in the statute that says that. There's no statute that says that treats it differently, and there's a public policy favoring recovery by victims of drunk drivers, which is also equally strong. I'm really unclear.
Sure.
If we were to adopt your argument here, and you're still not quite addressing, so I want to let you know my concern, is that I know you say it's different, but legally I don't see where it's different. If we were to adopt your argument and say, you know, they said you can't get in the car if you're drunk. What if they said you can't get in the car if you've been on the road 10 hours? We know there's lots of truck accidents all over the state, and they usually often happen because people are drivers are tired. Would there be no coverage for any of those? What about if you put in you can't drive negligently, which there's certainly a prohibition, a general policy against doing that? How could we legally draw that line if we were to adopt your point of view?
I think, Your Honor, legally you draw the line for two reasons. Number one is the statute specifically talks about express or implied permission. Secondly, these cases are fact determinative. So this
Well, I'm talking about the law part, though, because legally if you still have permission because it's just operational, then the court can't hold to the contrary. So legally, why is there a legal distinction and one goes to permission while the others only go to operation? That's what you're asking us to hold, and I want to know what you tether that to.
Because legally in this case, Mr. Campbell never had the permission. He never had the authorization to even enter into the vehicle because of BNSF's policy.
And so could BNSF's policy say you cannot enter the vehicle if you haven't had 10 hours sleep, and then you wouldn't be covered?
But, Your Honor, I think, again, we have a different public policy argument here involving a drunk driver than you do in that situation. And the trial court, again, made that distinction in clearly finding that in this particular case, based on these facts and clearly distinguished the other rental car cases, said that Mr. Campbell never had authorization to begin with. That factual determination by the trial court is undisputed.
Or is that a question of law? Was that a legal conclusion by the court, or was that actually a factual conclusion?
It was a factual determination by the court, in part based on Mr. Campbell's own admission that he did not have authorization, and citing to his specific testimony when he was asked at trial, in fact, you knew that the BNSF policies did not allow or give you any permission to operate a vehicle after you had been drinking, did it?
But the meaning of the term permissive user is a legal term. Whether these facts fit within that is a factual issue.
I understand that, and what the trial court said is that he could not have had permission, i.e. authorization, because of the fact that he was aware of and acknowledged that he could not even step foot into the vehicle if he had been drinking.
The distinction you're making, although you haven't articulated it this way, is the distinction between driving while intoxicated and speeding is One is a state of being of the driver, and the other is behavior while driving. So if you go through the examples that your opponent gave of speeding or driving carelessly or whatever, those would all fall under the method of driving, where the prohibition that if you've driven for 10 hours, or those would fall under the state of the driver's being, which would be similar to driving while intoxicated.
Right, and I think, and again, in some of the other cases, and Tharp in particular, talk about after the driver already has the express permission and then engages in an activity of, in that case, having another passenger in the vehicle who was not affiliated with the company, and also driving while intoxicated, that those rules cannot take away the permission that was already granted.
So, Judge. If he had waited until he got in the car to start drinking, then there would have been coverage. So if he'd have got in the car and drank his way to Little Rock and had this similar accident, then there would have been coverage in this case.
Your Honor, I mean, potentially that could be the scenario. And ultimately in Tharp, the scenario was that the employee had the express permission from the supervisor. In fact, there was evidence in that case directly from the president of the company. And what they were doing there was trying to use the rule that the company had to take that permission away. Here, Mr. Campbell never had permission to get into the vehicle to begin with. And again, and I think that's why the case law repeatedly says that these issues about permission, whether it's expressed or implied under the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Law, are factual issues for the court to decide. And the trial court clearly made that determination and appropriately applied the law. And part of its application of the law was looking to the Eighth Circuit case in Bunch, which was decided after the Tharp decision. And again, I think what this helps to establish is that this is not a sweeping determination by the Southern District in upholding the trial court's decision in this case. Based on the facts in the Bunch case, that express company policy that prohibited that person from ever using the vehicle to begin with also prohibited the employee from being able to give the permission to the driver. And that, I think, is the distinction and is not contrary to the public policy. The court, and while not a permissive use case, I think the Dutton versus American Family case that was decided by this court in 2015 is in fact instructive on this issue, because if the legislature had clearly intended to cover all situations, it would have drafted the statute that way. And as this court in Dutton explained, that is not in fact how the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Law applies. And then applying it back to the fact that there is express or implied permission built directly into the statute, the trial court properly looked at whether Mr. Campbell had permission in the first place to even get into that vehicle. And the court clearly determined that they did not. Now, I know we haven't even gotten to the issue about whether this was preserved for review.
That was what I was getting ready to ask you. Do we even need to get to this issue?
Well, our position is, and we stated it at the outset of our brief, both on points one and point two with regard to the issue of the trial court's jurisdiction, we do not believe that these have been preserved for appeal. And in fact, Judge, I know just within the last month, and I believe it was Judge Russell who dissented in that opinion about the issue of preservation, but regardless of whether we rely on that most recent opinion by you or the 2017 opinion in Sun Aviation or the Barclay decision in 2015, I think it is clear here that the point was not preserved for review. And so we don't believe that the court needs to even wade into this analysis. But if the court does, in fact, wade into the analysis, again, I go back to the fact that the public policy behind allowing an employer to restrict use of a vehicle to begin with when an employee is under the influence of alcohol does not trump the public policy behind the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Law. In fact, those policies are very well consistent with the laws, again, looking back to the very language of the statute, and regardless of whether the court decides to employ the plain language interpretation, as has been suggested by the Missouri Organization of Defense Lawyers, or decides to employ the use versus operate analysis, in either case, we believe the result is the same and that the trial court's judgment should be upheld. If there are no further questions, I'll go ahead and allow Mr. Malloy to proceed. Thank you.
The first thing I'd like to address is the Bunch case. That was a federal case that actually addressed a second permittee issue. There was an employer entrusted the car to an employee who then entrusted the car to another person who was drunk, and that person got in a wreck. The only reason, in my opinion, why that wasn't permissive use for the second permittee was the employee wasn't actually in the car at the time, so they weren't using it. Every case involving a second permittee has found the same thing, that if the first person who actually has permission to use the vehicle is still in the car, regardless of who's driving it, they're using it under Missouri's, under the omnibus insuring clause with permission. They're still using the car. And, you know, in the Bunch case, they weren't using the car because they weren't in it. They instead gave it to somebody who was drunk. With respect to the public policy position, again, to expand on what I was saying, if you accept their argument that, you know, a prohibition on entry into a vehicle will destroy permission under an omnibus insuring clause, will basically have disastrous consequences. An example that I came up with was a cell phone. Say they had a rule that says don't get into our vehicle with a cell phone because they don't want people being distracted playing Angry Birds or whatever, driving down the highway, getting in wrecks. So somebody gets in the vehicle with a cell phone and is distracted, gets in a wreck. Under their analysis, there would be no coverage because they had a cell phone on them. The same is true of alcohol. We've discussed that. Trucking companies, truckers who are in violation of time standards, they could certainly and probably do have prohibitions on entering the semi-trucks if you've not had your required time off, 10 on, 10 off, whatever the case may be. If their position is accepted, then those sleepy truckers going down 44 highway at 70 miles per hour, you wipe out a dozen vehicles, there'll be no coverage for those people or to protect the sleepy trucker for his negligence. Finally, with respect to the preservation of review issue, the only thing that I challenged was the trial court's ultimate conclusion, and that was, and I wrote it down here, is the credible and totality of the evidence relevant to this case establishes that sobriety was a precondition for Campbell to use a company-provided vehicle, including the Silverado. Based on that, which is what I challenged, in my point, I said that was a misapplication of the law, and that was a misdeclaration of the law. It was a misdeclaration because an alcohol operational rule like the ones at issue in this case cannot destroy permission under an omnibus insuring clause. It's a misapplication of the law because it didn't apply the law as announced in Sullivan and Tharp specifically that addressed alcohol rules. And this court in the Weathers and Scholl case, in the case from 1961, Winterton, which also addressed alcohol, and a number of other cases as well. That's what I challenged. I mean, there was no abandonment of any issue. That is what the challenge has always been. And I'm out of time, so thank you very much.
The case will be submitted.